The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast joins you on a Monday where the Milwaukee Brewers are a first-place baseball team, and they're riding a four-game winning streak heading into the Monday off day. They swept the Pittsburgh Pirates over the weekend, capping it with a dramatic win on Sunday. Christian Yelich bobblehead day, 45,000 people in attendance. Christian Yelich homers, Mike Moustakas hits a big home run. It was a nice weekend series, to say the least. After the Brewers started the week with two losses to the Marlins, they have won four straight since. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. This June, make it a $300,000 summer cash splash at Pottawatomie. Play with your club card June 1st through the 26th. Each Wednesday, 40 guests will win slot play and cash prizes up to $5,000. Visit paysbig.com/cash splash for more details. I'm going to be joined here in moments by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have a lot to discuss about the Milwaukee Brewers this week, not just the game themselves, although there were certainly was some interesting takeaways there. But two big things that happened to the Brewers over the past week. Keston Hiura was sent down back to AAA on Monday. We talked about that briefly looking ahead to that decision with Todd Rosiak last week on last week's podcast, but that was in the hours before the Brewers officially decided to send Hiura back down, activate Travis Shaw. A lot of controversy with that move. A lot of fans frustrated to see Keston Hiura, who was performing very well, go back to AAA San Antonio. So we will talk about that decision, some of the machinations there. Then, a lot of Brewers fans, of course, taking notice when the Chicago Cubs signed Craig Kimbrel after a long wait, a very long wait to see that free agent finally sign. Dallas Keuchel as well signing with the Atlanta Braves. It was pretty clear that those guys were going to sign once the draft started on Monday. That was the date at which point teams could sign those guys without forfeiting any draft picks, the way that the free agent compensation system is set up. It got to a point where we knew pretty well that those guys weren't going to sign until after teams could avoid that stipulation. And that is what happened after a couple days. Kimbrel signed with the Cubs. Happened to come at the time the Brewers were losing to the Miami Marlins, which was no good. One of the worst teams in the National League, if not the worst team. So the Brewers did not have a great start to the week, to say the least. I know a lot of fans were hoping that they would add Kimbrel to their bullpen, and he does end up getting a 3-year deal from the Cubs. Keuchel, a more modest one year, $13 million deal with the Braves. So Brewers fans hoping to see an upgrade in one of those two areas did not get it. Bullpen and starting rotation have been fine lately. It's not that they're a dire need, but certainly adding big time free agents, all-star free agents, would be something fans would get excited about. So we have to talk about those things, as well as Jimmy Nelson. Speaking of that game against the Marlins, that was the game Jimmy Nelson started after 21 months of injury and rehab and surgery, trying to get back on track. Jimmy Nelson is back with the big league team. It didn't go great. He struggled and ended up taking the loss in that game against the Marlins on Wednesday. But still, Jimmy Nelson back with the big league team, and it'll be interesting to talk to Tom about how much they expect to use him, how long they will use him for, if he struggles continuously, how long they will use him. Obviously, they hope that isn't what happens, that he bounces back. He'll be pitching again next on Saturday. His second start got pushed back a little bit. So we'll talk to Tom about that. After I chat with Tom, I got two interviews for you today, two extra interviews. One is Hernan Perez. He pitched in the 16-0 loss to Miami on Tuesday. Again, rough start to the week, but Hernan Perez had a fun time imitating one of his colleagues, Alex Claudio, on the mound, and doing a big leg kick, having a great time. He's been a pretty solid contributor for the Brewers. Very versatile guy. Isn't going to jump out at you with the stats on the page, although we did have a great game on Sunday, 3-for-3. Scored the tying run, I believe, to make it 2-2 late in the game, seventh inning. So he had a great night, and he's kind of there as a guy who can just play a lot of positions. He's the shortstop, backup shortstop. He can play outfield. He can play second base. He's played first base. In fact, he's played every position on the field except catcher. Talk to him about that, and as well as his pitching acumen. He did have a 1-2-3 inning in that 16-0 game, which was tough to come by. Those scoreless innings were tough to come by, so that was pretty entertaining. And chatted with him about that. After that, chatted with Mark Richards. He's the new public address voice of the Milwaukee Brewers at Miller Park. You may notice, if you go to the park, it's a new voice speaking to you, introducing the players, and letting you know what's going on in the ballpark. Rob Edwards, who's been doing this for many, many years, is slowly rolling back the number of games that he works. I believe he's working somewhere between 20 and 25 this year, and then he's going to retire at the end of the year. So they're moving somebody new sort of in that position, that being Mark Edwards, and or I should say Mark Richards, confusing my two guys here. So I chatted with him and got to know him a little bit, and you'll get to know him too at the end of that interview. But for now, first, let's start with Tom Haudricourt. Here he is now, Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Once again, everything he writes can be found at jsonline.com. Tom, like we said in the intro here, two big storylines to follow this week for the Brewers. I mean, obviously, in addition to the games where they've won four in a row heading into the week, but the decision early in the week to send Keston Hira to AAA when they activated Travis Shaw, and then the decision not to go after a couple of high-profile free agents in Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell. We'll start chronologically. Start with Keston Hira, and of course we will talk about some of these games as well. But I think at this point fans have kind of come to terms with it. It was a very controversial decision at the time for the team to send down their rookie who was playing so well when Shaw, who had struggled this year, came back. And a lot of fans will point to Jesus Aguilar over at first base struggling, that they could play Travis Shaw at first base or something along those lines. Is there any scenario you could think of where they could have kept Keston Hira up? He's not going to get at-bats as it stands right now. They have to get him at-bats. That's why they send him down. But is there anything they could have done? Maybe keep Shaw in AAA longer? Maybe have Jesus Aguilar, you know, do something with him? Was there any scenario where they could have kept Keston Hira on the roster?
Well, they could have done anything they wanted to keep Hira up, but it was going to come at the penalty of another player on their team, and one that they weren't ready to cut loose. If they were ready to cut somebody loose, they would have cut them loose and kept Keston Hira, but they're not. You know, unlike some irrational fans, teams do not throw players in the trash can when they're struggling. They just don't do it. If you did that, over the course of time, you would throw every player you have in the trash can. Because every player struggles. Maybe not Christian Yelich, but most players struggle for periods of time. And so are Travis Shaw and Jesus Aguilar off to dreadful starts to the 2019 season? Yes, they are. And did Keston Hira come up and hold his own for a two-week period? Yes, he did. I would also caution against saying any player after 2 weeks is a proven major league player. But they, you know, Travis Shaw and Jesus Aguilar hit 67 home runs between them last year and drove in almost 200 runs. So you're just not giving up on those players. You know, as Travis Shaw became arbitration eligible this year, and his salary jumped from $500,000 to $4.6 million because he had such a great resume to take to the arbitration from his first 3 years. So you're not going to invest $4.6 million in a player and just throw him in the trash can. So I know fans want teams to just push players aside when they're struggling and forget about them and go to the next guy, but there's not enough baseball players in the world to operate a team like that.
Yeah, I think one of the things I heard a lot was, well, Travis Shaw has options left. Why didn't they just leave him at AAA for a short time more, and until Keston Hira sort of flamed out, proved he couldn't do it anymore, whatever the case may be? And my thought there was, well, either Keston Hira flames out and you have to send him down and you've had an unproductive player on your roster, or it doesn't happen. You still have to make the same decision at some point, and you've irritated Travis Shaw, who is ready to be back with the big league team. I don't know how much they think about how much the veteran feels about it, or I know Travis Shaw has said all the right things, and I'm sure he's not the least bit irritated that things haven't gone well for him and that Keston Hira came up and was successful somewhat in his place. But I have to think at some point they got to bring him back to the big league team or risk having Travis Shaw get upset about it and feel like that the team turned their back on him. He was a great player for two straight seasons.
The deal is go down, prove you're healthy, play enough games to get some at-bats under your belt, and then you're going to come back. And they told Keston Hira the same thing when he came up. You know, we're probably going to send you down in a couple of weeks because we don't think Travis Shaw will be down any longer than that. So, you know, the Brewers are very transparent in telling players, you know, what they plan to do with them, because they don't want players to, they don't want to blindside players with moves. When at the end of spring training, these relievers that are kind of on the back end of the roster, they tell them, you guys are going to be coming back and forth all year because we're going to be keeping fresh arms in our bullpen whenever we can. So they sort of tell these players exactly what to expect. You know, can things change? Of course they can change. You know, and Jesus Aguilar is out of options. they're not ready to give up on him. If they put him on waivers to go to the minor leagues, I guarantee he'd be claimed by at least 10 teams, you know, especially in the American League where you can have the DH and, you know, put him in that type of role and just live with him until he gets going again. So, it's, you know, this is Castanera is not the first prospect to come up for a few weeks and go back down. Prince Fielder, they did it with him at the start of his career. They brought him up for like an interleague series and then sent him back down. So that's just the way it goes. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, this management team rebuilt a team in less than 3 years from scratch. They just basically got rid of every player except for Ryan Braun and got them within a game of the World Series. And they're in first place this year. So, I mean, if you don't trust them to know how they're operating their roster by now, then you're just never going to trust them.
Some people may never trust them, especially after another day where Grandal and Moustakas, the offseason signings that they were able to get for very reasonable deals, paid off. It seems like David Stearns has obviously done more right than wrong. Is there any chance with Aguilar's struggles continuing that I know they said they're hesitant to try Travis Shaw at first base, but is there any thought that that could be a possibility? Of course, the other side of that is, and you wrote about Eric Thames. Eric Thames is having a great year. Like, he is legitimately one of the five best offensive players they have. So it's not like, you know, it's not like you can just put another left-hander over there and expect him to get this all of Jesus Aguilar's at bats. It doesn't work quite that way.
They have two first basemen, Jesus Aguilar and Eric Thames. When Eric Thames hurt his thumb last year and missed 6 weeks, Aguilar stepped in to seize control of the position, and Eric Thames never got it back. This year, Aguilar had it. Eric Thames was the backup. Aguilar struggled. Thames got his chance, and now he's taking advantage of it. You know, he's got an on-base percentage in the high threes and a OPS in the mid to high eights. That's pretty good. You know, that's where a lot of players would love to be. So it's not like they don't have another option. And he's been playing very well at first base, too. He's made some nice plays in the field this past week. So would they like to get Aguilar going on days they face left-handed pitching? Yes, and he still gets his chances then. But it's going to be harder for him to get going with their regular playing time. He hit some balls hard Sunday. You know, today he hits the balls hard, and he has hit into some hard outs, and that's kind of the way it goes when you're struggling. Even the balls that you hit hard, you know, don't fall in. But is he the same player he was last year? Of course not. You know, he's just not hitting home runs like he used to. One of the biggest mysteries on the team. I don't know how you forget to hit home runs when you've always been pretty good at it. So, but this is why you build depth on your roster. You mentioned Grandal and Moustakas. They've been everything you could want offensively. So you toss in, you know, the perpetually unconscious Christian Yelich. Ryan Braun's having a very nice year. Other guys, you know, Lorenzo Cain has his ups and downs. But on any given night, you know, they're having guys, enough guys do. You know, they're in like the top five in the league and runs scored, and they have this, and they have, as I wrote the other day, they have almost exactly the same number of runs scored as the Cubs. So offense is not this team's problem.
Yeah, Moustakas hit his 20th home run, a go-ahead home run in the eighth on Sunday. He has been tremendous. He, Grandal, Yelich, all of them should be squarely in the conversation to make the National League All-Star team that fans have already begun to vote on. Last thought on Hira before we move on. David Stern said service time had nothing to do with it. I think it's defensible that he's telling the truth there. We've talked about it. There weren't going to be at-bats for Keston Hira unless they took them away from somebody that they're not ready to give up on. But it should be noted that it does push him further away from that Super 2 threshold in a couple years when, you know, a player like him could wind up with some early arbitration and get a big payday early. Do you think that the Brewers at least, even secondarily, have that consideration when they make a move like this?
Well, I mean, is it a factor? It might be a factor. Is it the deciding factor? I doubt it. So let me ask you this. If the day after they sent Hira down, Shaw would have broke his leg, would they have called Tyler Saladino up instead of recalling Hira because of service time?
That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Do you think they would have gotten away with doing that? If they did, people would just murder him to death for that.
Yeah. You know? Saladino is crushing it at AAA, though, or at least he was. I haven't looked at it.
I'm not insulting Tom Saladino.
No, I know.
I'm just saying, you know, circumstances and need have a lot to do with what happens. Do you think they'd give a darn about Super 2 if they needed Keston Hira to win? No,
that's a really good point. Really good point. Let's move on to the convo about Keuchel and Kimbrel. Dallas Keuchel signing this one-year $13 million deal with the Braves. Craig Kimbrel getting a three-year deal from the Cubs worth $43 million. Starting with Keuchel, I know, and you've written about this, money is tight, budget is tight. They're not looking to add big contracts onto the books. I look at that Keuchel contract and see one-year $13 million. That doesn't seem to me to be very cost prohibitive compared to, obviously, other contracts for former Cy Young pitchers. I'm guessing the Brewers just didn't feel like Keuchel was someone they wanted to chase after. I mean, at that price, it seems like a lot of teams would have been in on that. Brewers starting pitching has been solid at the very least and great at times. I'm guessing they just didn't think Dallas Keuchel was for them.
Well, I don't think they have $13 million in this year's budget either, unless they want to make no moves at the trade deadline. You know, I think that if they would have given somebody $13 million or even Kimbrel the $10 million that he's going to make this year, I think they would absolutely have no leeway to get anybody at the trade deadline. And I'm sure they're going to want to, like most contending teams at the trade line, bolster their bullpen. And, you know, like 80% of all moves at the trade deadline are bullpen moves because that's what you just never have enough of. And, you know, in essence, the Cubs have already made their big trade deadline bullpen move. It just came a month early, you know, than the trade deadline because Kimbrel was available at this time. But, you know, it's still, and I wrote about it in my Sunday column, it's still fascinating to me that the narrative out of Chicago is that they probably would not have had the leeway to sign Kimbrel if they weren't saving money because Ben Zobrist left the team to go get divorced. I mean, that's an amazing narrative to me, an amazing narrative. So this totally unforeseen thing happens where a player just walks away from his contract because of personal issues. And they're not denying it. You know, there's been lots of talk down there, you know, that's where some of the leeway came to sign Kimbrel. Of course, they signed him for 3 years, too. So they're going to pay him $16 million the next year and $16 million after that. So we'll see how that works out. But, you know, the Brewers aren't saving money on anybody being on the restricted list. You know, so that's just fascinating to me that I'm not sure they'd have Craig Kimbrel if not for that. If you read the narratives coming out of Chicago, those things were tied together. You know, unless I'm missing something or stuff's being misreported, those things were connected. So we'll see. I mean, the Cubs definitely addressed their biggest weakness. They were having trouble closing games. I think they had 12 blown saves. You know, the Brewers have Josh Hader, you know. Is Craig Kimbrel better right now than Josh Hader? I'm not sure you can make that argument. Who is better than Josh Hader?
Yeah.
All he does is strike everybody out. Of course, Kimbrel does when he's good, too. When he's on top of his game, he strikes everybody out, too. So we'll see. You know, the Brewers and the Cubs are not playing by the same financial rules. You know, last year when the Brewers beat the Cubs in a extra game, 163, to win the division, the Brewers were playing with a $100 million payroll, and the Cubs were playing with a nearly $200 million payroll. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves there. These teams are not playing by the same financial rules, and just like the Los Angeles Dodgers either. So, the Brewers have to be way smarter about their money, and they cannot afford a Yu Darvish situation like the Cubs have, where you're paying over $150 million or whatever they're paying him to a guy who's been mostly hurt. That would be a crushing blow to their finances to have that kind of money wrapped up in somebody who got hurt.
Yeah, or even a Tyler Chatwood. I mean, Darvish is the easy one to point to, but they've got other guys who they're paying a lot of money to that aren't necessarily, you know, star contributors. The Brewers simply
Jason Hayward. You know, has, you know, perked up some this year, but there's nobody suggesting he's living up to his contract.
No, for sure.
So teams that have, you know, the Cubs have the number two payroll in the major leagues behind the Red Sox, who won the World Series with the highest payroll in the major league. let's not kid ourselves about who's, you know, winning with big payrolls. The Dodgers, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, all these teams with the top payrolls are winning.
Yeah, it's a little hard to believe anytime you hear the Cubs say they don't have money for something, because they have traditionally had plenty of money. And I know Cubs fans were also very skeptical of that line of thinking. And then again, this whole divorce situation freeing up money is also a little strange, like you said. I don't know. I mean, 3 years, $43 million, I know that that's something the Brewers just could not have entertained. But I wonder if they had, if they were seriously engaging with him, if they thought maybe they could get him on a one-year deal, but it would have had to have been north of $13 million, $15 million.
After Corey Knebel, the news broke in March that Corey Knebel was going to miss the whole year with Tommy John surgery, it was well reported that the Brewers reached out to Kimbrel, and I'm guessing they made a one-year offer to him, and he said no, I'm guessing they were, they stepped into the breach when Yasmani Grandal wasn't getting what he wanted and offered him a one-year deal. They stepped in the breach when Mike Moustakas wasn't getting what he wanted and gave him a one-year deal. You have to assume they used the same modus operandi with Kimbrel, and he said no.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Brewers do have the highest payroll that they have ever had with those two signings, so they are in uncharted territory. I know for a lot of fans, it's just tough to see the Cubs get better perceptively.
Yeah, that's the killer part of it. It's not just they're PO'd because the Brewers didn't get Kimbrel; it's who got him. I think really any of the other 28 teams would not have been aggravating, even the Cardinals. It's just, your very chief rival team can get them. And there's a lot of Brewers fans who just say they can get whoever they want. Well, there is some truth to that. Not completely truthful, but there is some truth to that. And so that's just the way it is. You said we had two major storylines. Let's talk about the third one that I know you're aware of, Jimmy Nelson.
Yeah, I did not think we would be this deep into the podcast when the week started before talking about Jimmy Nelson. He did have a rough debut outing on Wednesday, but after 21 months, Nelson finally back on the mound. A really long comeback. He gets a standing ovation. I know that was a huge moment for him, huge moment for the whole Brewers franchise. Obviously, it's hard to gauge much from that first start back. He did have a rough inning that led to a Brian Anderson grand slam that put the Brewers behind the eight ball. But, I asked this of Todd last week as well, how much the Brewers will let him struggle to get his feet back under him, to shake off the rust before they have to say, well, we have to look in another direction. I mean, first of all, it's just incredible that he's back. I realize that they're going to give him several starts to sort of get his sea legs. But there's also, I guess, a little bit of concern, like, well, what if this doesn't work out? There's sort of that little tension in there after a first start, even though, you got to give him a lot of leeway here.
Well, that would be one of those cross that bridge when you get to it scenarios. And so they're not going to talk about that, and nor should we. But if any pitcher has ever earned a first game mulligan, it's Jimmy Nelson after missing 21 months in the major leagues. He was upset because his downfall in the third inning of SR was because he stopped throwing strikes. And he has not had that issue anywhere along the way during his minor league rehab and his throwing sessions and stuff. So that was what irked him, was that, he was his own worst enemy and he never saw that coming. Who knows if the emotional energy just kind of sapped him a little bit. I mean, I just can't even imagine what was going through his mind. Plus, we found out later in the day something he already knew, that his premature twin daughters had been released from the hospital that day after being there for a month. And, there was all kinds of medical peril going on there with his wife and babies. So what an uplifting thing to know that they came home that day. And so he's just had so much on his plate. I wrote a column that night in which I tried to go into a little bigger detail about the severity of his injury. I don't know how many pitchers have ever come back from what in essence was a total destruction of his shoulder. He had torn labrum, torn rotator cuff, a torn capsule. I mean, just a completely blown out shoulder. You would just never imagine a guy could do that from diving back into first base after getting a base hit. It just didn't seem possible. But it was bad. It was really, really bad. And it became evident over time just how bad it was when he wasn't able to come back until well over a year. 21 months is a long time to be out of action. I'm not sure how many pitchers missed 21 months and come back and make it back. So he deserves all the credit in the world for hanging in there. He's been through a lot of torturous stuff. And so let's see what happens now, you know? This guy, I don't know if he'll be as good as he was in 2017 when he was starting to really come into his own. But let's see. We don't know. This story is – the final chapters of this story have not been written yet.
His twin daughters, we've talked about this before, but they were essentially sharing a blood supply in the womb. It's the Nelsons' their first children, so they had to monitor the pregnancy very closely. It was a very at-risk situation. They were able, it sounds like, were able to you know, make sure the twins got here healthily, and they're now home, as you said. So huge news for the Nelson family in addition to all of this.
Yeah, he might be with them right now. I think they were going to let, you know, the team, conveniently for him, is going to Houston now where he lives. For an interleague series, and because there's an off day tomorrow and he's not pitching in those two games, I believe they let him go ahead on home.
Awesome.
Because man, would, you know, this is a dad looking to hug his babies, you know, and finally being out of the hospital with all the tubes and stuff, you know, being disconnected from him. So he's going to have a glorious 4 days on the family front down there, and then he's supposed to pitch again Saturday in San Francisco. So, you know, let's let him have the joyous family time that he deserves, and then let's see what happens on Saturday in San Francisco. More of a pitcher's ballpark against a struggling team. Maybe that's a good matchup for him.
Yeah, definitely. They did push back that start a little bit. Houston, it'll be just a two-game series that starts on Tuesday. The Brewers will have the misfortune of seeing, you know, the best team in baseball, although it's close. They've already played the Twins, just a couple wins behind the Astros. So that'll be an interesting matchup. They'll face Justin Verlander, but then Jimmy Nelson, like you said, will take the mound Saturday. The rotation's in a little bit of flux right now because of some injuries, with Chacin and Gio Gonzalez on the injured list at this point. Freddy Peralta looked really good in his one start of the week, filling back in as a starting pitcher. He's been kind of back and forth. What is your sense on the injury situation with Gio Gonzalez and Yoli Chacin? Do you expect those guys back soon, or is this — we haven't really asked if this is going to be a long-term thing. It's kind of hard to say at this point.
Yeah, Council told us Saturday that they expect Chacin back on this road trip, obviously more towards the end of it than the beginning of it. So we expect it, you know, because after that off day Thursday, JR, they're off Monday, play two in Houston, then off Thursday. After that off day, I think they only have one off day the rest of the way going into the All-Star break. You know, they're going to start playing a whole ton of games here now. The baseball schedule is so weird. You go all this time without any off days. Then you have a ton of them that you — yes — don't really need. And then all of a sudden they take them away from you again. Too bad they don't, like, you know, parse them out a little more evenly. So, but anyway, they expect Chacin back sometime before that road trip over, but not Gio Gonzalez. He has not even started throwing yet. So let's see what happens with him. You know, he had a truncated season before they signed him. He had no spring training, no team. Then he signed with the Yankees. Then he went to the minors. Then the Brewers got him after the Yankees were forced to cut him loose contractually. So he had a different kind of prep year, kind of all jammed into the few weeks before he started pitching. So let's see what happens with him. You know, I hope he's okay. They're not calling it anything structural. He's basically got what we call in baseball dead arm, you know, where your arm just doesn't have life in it. So let's see what happens with him. But we're not looking to get him back anytime soon. But they're okay because of Freddie and Jimmy. You know, they got enough guys. You got Zach Davies. Let's give him props for becoming the first Brewers starter in team history to go 7-0 to start a season. You know, that's they're 50 years in on their franchise now. They got their first 7-0 pitcher at the start of the season. So that's noteworthy.
Yeah, hard to imagine looking back at last year. You'd have asked who are the big starters for the Brewers. I'm not sure Zach Davies and Brandon Woodruff would have been choices one and two, but yet here they are holding it together, and that's a solid starting rotation. Like, there are very few blowout losses on account that 16-0 game notwithstanding. Very few situations where the starters have struggled this year. So it's an interesting situation. Chase Anderson has just had a pretty good outing after he did struggle in that game that ultimately became a 16-0 game. So he's still contributing, and they're like you said, they've got some depth in the starting rotation.
And speaking of that, you talk about how unpredictable baseball can be. So the Brewers begin their homestand by losing to the last place Marlins 16-0 and 8-3. I'm sure everybody saw coming a 4-2 homestand after that.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's a couple tense wins or close-ish wins on Saturday and Sunday to cap things off. And now they go in with a 4-game winning streak, total head of steam going into the next week, starting with the Astros and the Giants. There is one more thing to discuss before I let you go. The draft was this week, kind of buried under all these other storylines. Brewers went with Ethan Small in the first round, got to see him pitch for Mississippi State. On Saturday night, went up against Kumar Rocker of Vanderbilt, who struck out 19 and threw a no-hitter, so he wasn't the storyline. But part of a bigger trend, the Brewers, with ridiculous number of left-handed college pitchers, I believe 18 left-handed pitchers that they pulled in amongst their 39 picks, that's crazy. And I know they said that wasn't necessarily what they were trying to do, but it is notable that they don't have a lot of left-handed starting pitching talent in the minor league system, high-level talent. And it seems to me they're just trying to reload and get guys here fast.
Yeah, 18 college pitchers, not all of them lefties. I think there were
eight, 18 college guys, sorry.
18 college guys out of 21 pitchers. They had 21 pitchers out of 39 picks. So they went pitching heavy and college pitching heavy. I think like 8 or 9 of them were lefties, and that's a lot. One of the things they don't have much of in their system is left-handed pitchers. They only have one in their top 30 prospects, Aaron Ashby, who was in from the draft either last year or year before. So they're not left-handed. They do not have a wealth of left-handed pitching. Well, if they sign all these guys, they will.
yeah.
I was joking with Todd Johnson. I said, you guys are going to go from having the thinnest left-handed pitching system to one of the thickest left-handed pitching systems. So they obviously saw, they say they pick, the best available player, but I think there's some financial considerations as well. They have a very low draft pool because they forfeited two high picks, and you lose the money associated with those picks. So they don't have a ton of money to spend. College pitching is generally a little cheaper than high school players because they don't have college scholarships to hold against you as leverage. So I would imagine that we're going to start. They've already signed their number two pick, Antoine Kelly. He's a left-handed college pitcher from right down the road in Wabash Valley, I think Community College, somewhere in Illinois. And he's a fascinating guy because he's like a 6'7" tall, lanky lefty who can throw 99 miles an hour, but sometimes has control issues. Sounds to me like the way Randy Johnson started his career, a tall lefty who had trouble throwing strikes, but could throw 100 miles an hour. So let's see what happens out of that kid. It sounds like they went for raw material there with very high upside. So let's see what happens with him. He's only 18 years old. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah, we'll start seeing the signings come here. We got to talk to Ethan Small on the phone. He seemed like a really fun guy, so it'll be nice to meet him. And so, the rookie ball is going to start here in a couple of weeks. A whole bunch of new players in the system about to make their professional debuts.
Yeah, you can take a look during the week. I'm sure we'll get that press release announcing like 30 signings at once. That'll be coming here. Most certainly in the next few days. He is Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering your team. JSOnline.com is where you can find everything he has to say, his weekly columns, his game coverage. It's all there for you at JSOnline.com. Tom, thank you for joining us this week. We will chat again very soon.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom. Let's move now to my conversation with Hernán Pérez. He had a great day on Sunday. 3-for-3, big run scored that tied the game in the seventh inning, and has been a pretty reliable, versatile member of the Brewers the Brewers roster. He's not a guy who's obviously going to go out and put up big time numbers, but he's somebody who keeps things loose, and we've seen that this week with him pitching for the team in their 16-0 blowout. He's gotten on the mound, I believe, 5 times in his career, second time this year, and he definitely knows how to have fun out there, and actually made that 16-0 game a little bit easier to take as something as kind of a lighthearted footnote to that. So I obviously talked to him about that when the Brewers were in town for this past homestand, and talk to him about his son, who's a celebrity. Christopher Perez is kind of as well known as any, certainly as any kid on the Brewers, among the current Brewers. So he's, I talked to Hernan about that. I talked to Hernan about playing every position. He's somebody who's said in the past he really wants to catch at some point. Hasn't had the opportunity yet, but that could be coming. We don't know. So asked him about that a little bit, as well as an incident last year during the playoffs where he had a Gatorade cooler after Mike Moustakas hit a walk-off that that got the Brewers a win over the Rockies, and he ran a pretty good length of field with a full cooler, because kind of a slow jog with a very full Gatorade cooler, and then he didn't end up hitting his target after quite a bit of work. It was very funny. He's definitely one of the easier guys to root for, lighthearted member of the team. So here's my conversation with Hernan Perez. My guest is Hernan Perez, infielder, outfielder, pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, and a lot of people have seen you pitch now. Very enjoyable experience, even though the Brewers lost 16-0. Do you work on the pitching at all? It's obviously not the first time you've done it. Do you spend time developing it at all? Is there any time for you to do that?
No, not really. I just, when that opportunity comes, I just go out there, try to throw strike and get out the inning quick. And that's what happens sometimes, because, you know, the hitter, when they face another position player, they try to do too much, and that's when the outs come easy.
Would you describe your repertoire as fastball, curveball? Do you have a repertoire? You're just throwing the ball?
I just throw the ball. Sometimes I just throw straight. Sometimes I try to throw curveball, but it's nothing like really cool. Yeah. Just slower. But I don't have any like repertoire right there.
Are you also? You're also the emergency catcher, aren't you? Are you the third catcher, or is that not for you?
Oh yeah, I would love to do it.
Sure.
If I had the opportunity to cut, I'd do it 100%.
Right, and I know that you want to do that, to play every position, which you've played the other eight. Have you come close? Has there ever been a moment where you actually thought you were going to get a chance to do this?
I think last year there was a chance where Kratz came to pitch, and I told Council to put me to catch.
He should have done it.
Yeah, because he's not a guy who throw hard or something like that. Just
right.
But he didn't do it.
He should have done it. That would have been incredible. The idea of being a utility player, is that something you've always had in your career? I know you kind of came up as an infielder with Detroit, but have you always been a guy who likes to play outfield, who likes to move around on the diamond?
When I was a little, I haven't signed yet. I used to play everywhere. But that was my last year with Detroit, when I started to play everywhere.
Yeah.
But like you said, I come out like an infielder, like a shortstop. I enjoy what I do right now. I love what I do. If I'm there to help my team to win, I really enjoy always.
Yeah. It seems like that's something that's been true of these last... You say you love what you do. These teams have been fun, these Brewer teams that you've been on. Is that something that just has happened naturally, or is it someone like you, or like a leader on this team, who's just getting guys to relax, keeping guys loose? Do you see that as something that you do?
Not that I do. I think everybody do his part.
Sure.
Everybody's connected, and we are like a family. No matter where we come or somebody come from, we just try to be like a family, and that's why we have success.
Sure. The World Baseball Cup, you got to represent Venezuela in the World Baseball Cup. How was that? How was that experience for you?
I mean, that was a great experience. Represent my country was something that I always had in mind, and they gave me opportunity, and that was a great experience.
How often do you, because Venezuela obviously has a lot of unrest, do you pay attention to that? Do you keep tabs on that, or is that not something you really can worry about during the baseball season?
It's hard to not worry about it. You know, I have my family there, my dad, my mom, my brother, my sister is over there.
Sure.
So it's hard to not be aware of what happened there.
Yeah.
But I try to keep it out the field. When I'm here in the field, I try to not think about that.
Yeah. Your son Christopher, of course, is here, and he's become quite the celebrity. How does that sit with you, the fact that he's a guy that a lot of people know at this point?
I mean, have Christopher all the time here is great, because sometimes we go to a row 10, 12 days, and you know, with your family. So
yeah.
I try to spend more the time with him and enjoy him a lot, because the time goes quick. So they grow up too fast, and I have to enjoy all those moments.
The other moment that I think fans know about you from last year's playoffs, you had the Gatorade container, and you ran across the field with the Gatorade container, missed your target, got Ryan Braun instead. Does that embarrass you, or it's just a fun moment?
Not really. It's a fun moment. That was a walk-off. You know, everybody's happy. And I think Ryan Braun scored the winning run that day.
Sure, so he should have got
He should have got some of those. But I missed Moose, who was the guy who did the hit. So everybody enjoyed it.
So last thought, just moments in your career. What's the one thing that sticks out so far? One or two things that stick out that you've accomplished that you would say are kind of the highlights of your career to this point?
I think everything, playing playoff with the Brewers, something like I was when I came here, we didn't have any chance at all. So having all this year with the Brewers, I've been a lot of great moments. I mean, playing with Yelich, mm-hmm. playing with Ryan Braun, MVPs, playing with Lorenzo Kay, MVP World Series sometimes. So I think those moments I never forget. I try to enjoy every time when I'm here in the field and enjoy.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
Now I move to a convo with Mark Richards. He's the new public address voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's a longtime radio veteran in the Milwaukee market. If you're into radio, you know this guy's voice. You've heard it before, and now you hear it at Miller Park, announcing the names, letting people know what's going on inside the ballpark. This is his first season, filling a pretty big slate of games. Rob Edwards, who's been the public address voice of the Milwaukee Brewers for quite some time, has scaled back his workload. He's down to about 25 games this season. So Mark Richards is handling the rest of them, and you'll surely be hearing him then on a full-time capacity next year with Rob retiring from that position. So I wanted to introduce you to him and get to know him a little bit. Here's my conversation.
My guest is Mark Richards. He is the new public address voice of the Milwaukee Brewers at Miller Park. If you head out to the game, you may notice that a little bit different voice calling the names of the players and whatnot. And so, Mark, first of all, to give a sense of who you are, you're a big name in Milwaukee radio, but for those who do not know,
yes.
What have you done in Milwaukee thus far? How would people have known your voice before now?
Well, as you say, been in, I don't know if big name is the right way to put it, but
Milwaukee
name.
Radio.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that. A name. That's fine. I've been working in radio in Milwaukee since the early 1980s.
Excellent.
At several different stations. Currently, you can hear me on the air at 96.5 WKLH. I do weekends and whatever else they might need me to do there.
Very good.
I've done that. Done a lot of commercial voiceover work for radio and TV and a few other things. And now I do this, too.
Yes. So I'm going to sidetrack. I'm guessing you've seen a ton of concerts in Milwaukee. Give me your top two or three. If somebody asks you that, what do you give them?
Matter of fact, one of the best concerts I think I've ever seen in Milwaukee happened right here. At Miller Park when I saw Kenny Chesney a few years
uh-huh,
back.
Uh-huh, okay.
People
love that show. He sells this place out.
Oh, man, every time he comes here, and this was the first time I think he played Miller Park. Okay. And I hadn't seen Kenny Chesney in a while, and I forgot how good he is in concert.
He's
outstanding. Yeah, and it was a great lineup too, because it was Kenny Chesney,
Eric Church,
right?
Yep.
Who else was it? It was Eli Young Band.
Okay.
And Kacey Musgraves.
Yes, man. Before she got huge.
Yeah,
wow.
It was just when she was first coming up. I had her
awesome.
First album out, which is the one I think she won a Grammy for. Which amazing. And that's probably one of the best ones. I also had the pleasure of seeing Frank Sinatra twice.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Okay. We are on two different poles here. You've got Kenny Chesney and Frank Sinatra.
Kenny
That's
Chesney
great.
And Frank Sinatra. And to throw in one more just for a giggle, the Eagles.
Oh, okay.
The first time they rolled through on the Hell Freezes Over tour.
Okay. That'd be 99, 2000, something in that neck of the woods.
Before that, actually.
Okay.
Mid-90s, 94, 95,
sure.
Somewhere around there. And, I remember that one very well, too, because it was at the Bradley Center, and the lights go, the house goes dark.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you see some movement up on the stage, and then you hear those first couple of chords of Hotel California.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, this is
awesome.
Going to be great. Yeah.
Awesome. So this is a little bit of a departure from the music part of things. How did you come to this? Was somebody approach you asking you if you were interested in doing some PA, or is it something you explored?
I was working at KLH back last December.
Okay.
And somebody approached me and said, "Hey, Mark, they're looking for a new PA announcer at Miller Park. You might want to check into that."
Yeah.
So I made a couple of phone calls and found out that there was going to be an opening. That that Rob Edwards, who'd been doing it since actually before they moved into Miller Park, was was stepping down, was tiring. Retiring, I should say. He is doing about 20 games this year.
Yeah.
Kind of his victory lap, which
yes,
is good for Rob.
Absolutely.
Love Rob. He's a great guy. But and I get the rest. And so I submitted an application, just like everybody else did online. And a couple of weeks went by, and I heard from somebody here at the Brewers organization. We did a telephone interview with me, like a first interview. And I got called in for an audition, and came to the ballpark, did the audition. A couple of weeks, and it wasn't just reading like one piece of copy, I should point that out too. They gave me like a 13, 14 page script.
Wow.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that I end up reading, or the announcer would hit read during the course of a game, like the usual preliminary announcements, the starting lineups, and they even had me call a sausage race. They played the video on the scoreboard, and I called
beautiful
the sausage race. Did that, and a couple weeks after that, I got called back for a second audition. I'm like,
okay,
that's pretty good. And when I arrived for the second audition, that's when they told me, Mark, you're the only one we called back for a second audition. We'd like to offer you the
that's
job.
That's perfect.
And I said, oh, man, you got to be kidding.
That's
and
great.
I said yes, and it's been a thrill.
Yes.
It's been a lot of fun.
What was your relationship to baseball before now? I'm assuming you were a fan.
Of course. Always have been a baseball fan. Follow the game as much as I can during the course of the season. I mean, the Brewers, I keep an eye on the standings for all the other teams. Boston Red Sox are also one of my teams I follow. And Pittsburgh Pirates, too, because I went to college in Pittsburgh at Duquesne University.
Oh, very good. Okay.
And my senior year, that was when the Pirates won the World Series.
Yeah, we are family.
Yeah, that's the one.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was telling somebody the other night, I still remember their starting lineup back from then. Because they had a terrific team. I mean, Willie Stargell, Dave Parker, future Brewer manager Phil Garner.
That's right.
Base,
that's right. Scrap
others.
Iron at the time. Very good.
Yeah, so I remember that quite well. In fact, my junior and senior year, we had two Super Bowls and the World Series.
You were the Boston of the, you know, of then.
Back then, yeah.
And you still cheer for Boston now. How convenient.
Well you know, for me, with the Boston Red Sox thing, my younger brother Steve is a New York Yankee fan.
Oh, okay.
So
it's a rivalry.
So we kind of got into a rivalry thing there, just to get under his skin about the Yankees a little bit.
So you don't have to go in deep into the weeds, but you're here a couple hours here before the start of a game. What is some of the prep work like? I mean, it seems pretty, I'm sure from an outsider's perspective, it seems pretty easy. You got a list of names, you read the names, but it's obviously more than that.
Well, it's actually 2 hours before the start of every game. The scoreboard crew has a production meeting.
Yep.
A little run through of what we're going to be doing, where we're going to be doing some of the things and all that. So there's no surprises. And, you know, that gives me a chance to see what we're going to do. And
sure.
I mean, some of the stuff is consistent, like you always have the hero of the game at a certain time. You always have the sausage race in the middle of the sixth inning.
Yeah.
Seventh inning stretch, of course, seventh inning. But, you know, occasionally there's a couple little things that you have to do that are a little different.
Yeah.
And that just preps everybody. Then me, I grab the lineups here and go through some of that and write down all the stuff so I'm good to go. And just work off of that. I score the game as I go along because that keeps me in the game. It's like reading a book and not putting a bookmark in. It's like, okay, where the heck did I leave off here? No, this keeps me on track and
I
know
that.
Where I'm going. So that's part of how I do what I do also.
You're used to your voice projecting all over Milwaukee, but it's a little different being in a radio studio and not seeing your audience, whereas you see this cavernous building, you're hearing your voice. Well, how nervous were you at the start of this? Is this something, are you settled in now, or is it still?
It's still fun. It's still a thrill. That's
sure,
the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I sit here and I said, wow, I get to do this again tonight. I mean, I get to be there at a baseball game. I mean, it's and I sit there and I'll think every once in a while, where would I rather be? And I'm going, probably nowhere. it's a lot of fun, and it's a great bunch of people to work with too. I have to tell you that the whole scoreboard crew from top to bottom, it's a lot of fun working with these people. And everybody's just, I've never seen anybody showing up here grumpy.
Right.
You know,
sometimes they leave here grumpy, but no, not showing up.
Well, after last night, I don't know. It's a whole lot of fun, and it's just a very it's a kid's dream come true. It really is.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for asking.
That is what we have for you today on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. A reminder to make it a $300,000 summer cash splash at Pottawatomie. Play with your club card this June, then Wednesdays. You can win prizes starting at $1,000. Get full information at paysbig.com/cash splash. The Brewers, as we mentioned, will head to head to Houston here, hit the road. Two games against the Astros, the best team in the American League, followed by a three-game set against the San Francisco 49ers. And then they stay on the West Coast for three games against the San Diego Padres. That wraps up Wednesday, the 19th. The Brewers are back in town at Miller Park starting on Thursday, June 20th, when the Reds come to town for a four-game series. And the Mariners and Pirates, it's a long homestand. Kind of be interesting to see the Mariners. A lot of Brewers connections on that Mariners team. Domingo Santana, Mitch Haniger among them. So it'll be kind of cool to see that team in town. Obviously, you don't always get to see that American League West team in Miller Park. So that is something to look forward to here in the weeks ahead. The Brewers again go into the week on a four-game winning streak. They are a first-place team in the National League Central. And things are going okay. I know those two games against the Marlins were a little tough, but things are going okay. Thanks to Tom Hodricourt, Aaron Perez, and Mark Richards for joining me on this episode of the podcast. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Find me on Twitter at J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Let me know what you think. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat with you again next week.